This is pure fun. This is one of the most fun assignments I've had in all my experience. Hey, Dave, I was falsely arrested by a judge in San Mateo County Superior Court, California, and I need to know what you can do for me. This judge is something else, and I fear that they're just going to go ballistic, and I'll end up in jail for months and months. This was a tattoo parlor owner that the city of San Mateo wanted to run out of town. Trumped up some criminal charges on him in Superior Court. I had never been on the criminal docket in Superior Court before with anything, but this guy called me. I sensed that the target was huge because he wasn't in contempt of court, but he was arrested for it anyway. The judge didn't give him a chance to allocute, to explain why he was not in contempt, to prove he was innocent. So I get this call, and the judge says I have to have a mental evaluation, and she arrested me without cause. And what you're going to hear is it might be a little over a minute. It's his hearing. It's a minute long, where the judge, Lisa Novak, begins by saying, good morning, I'm in receipt of two letters, one from Dr. Samuels and Dr. Stevenson, and they say you didn't go to see them. Do you have an excuse for not seeing these two doctors? And he says, yeah, this and that, and do you have an excuse for not recusing yourself? And she says, the defendant is remanded into custody, and you'll hear the cuffs going on to his wrists. And he starts citing statutes she's violating about arraignment and a couple other things. And then we'll go through the documents. And after that, you'll hear an interview, 2007, of a man that attended these hearings to watch the proceedings. And you'll get his take on what this paperwork did to that judge. Now, this is not the picture of Lisa Novak. This is the picture of a judge in Seattle. She's now in Superior Court, King County, but was in a municipal court in 1999 when, on August 13th, she arrested me for contempt for no reason. I didn't have Lisa Novak's picture, so I thought I'd put Marianne Spearman's photograph to this page. And we see Judge Lisa Novak, Northern Court, 1050 Mission Road, South San Francisco, California, appointed in 2005 by Arnold Schwarzenegger. You'll hear in the interview, after the documents that the public defender shared with the defendant and his witness, the fact that this is one of the most dreaded judges they've got, just a pathetic mess of a judge, Lisa Novak. So I get this phone call Tuesday afternoon, actually Monday, and I think his hearing was like on Friday prior. And he says, gosh, I was arrested. You know, I got a recording of the hearing. I said, send me an overnight cassette recording of the hearing. Overnight mail. Tuesday afternoon, I had the tape in hand. And Friday afternoon, he had this paperwork in hand, filing it into the court and other places, as we'll see, for his next hearing, which was, I don't know how long after his filings. And you'll hear the witness describe the change in the court's demeanor. It was a new world after the law appeared in court, finally. It hadn't been there in some time. You can just tell. So there's two ways to look at this page. From the bottom up, we'll indicate to you the filing sequence, which was filed first, which was filed second. And as the stack grows, we're getting closer to the top where the picture is of the Seattle judge. Or you can look at it from the top down. From the top down is how the judge would see the stack. Oh, what has the tattoo parlor owner filed today? Gather everybody. We're going to have a laugh now. And as the judge digs through this paperwork deeper and deeper and deeper, to get to the bottom where she's accused of perjury and there's a petition to impanel a grand jury in her honor, Your Honor. Listen to the interview and for an indication of what this stack of pleadings did to that judge. It changed her temperature. It amended her constitution. Believe it. Now, these are in Microsoft Word, and you see that at the top of the stack I have a link to all of it in PDF on pleading paper. It's not a copy of the court file, but I went ahead and printed these documents onto Word or onto pleading paper and put them in one stack and scanned them, along with a letter at the end of that PDF document from the public defender. What happened was all this paperwork hit the record, and this convinced Lisa Novak to recuse herself because the appearance of fairness was lost. And thereafter, the next judge comes in, and everything's calm. The defendant's rights are of primary import. They said so on the record. And now that the court was calm, the public defender this guy didn't even ask for was able to analyze the record for violations of whatever nature, submitted a motion to dismiss based on speedy trial rights, and voila, the judge says, are all these violations true, to the prosecutor? Prosecutor says, I'll check. And later on, that public defender got a phone call saying he was going to dismiss the case. The prosecutor was going to dismiss the case. So in the heat of battle, where this judge is ordering him to see doctors about mental instability for a psychiatric evaluation when she had no probable cause to believe that he was infirm. If that isn't a conspiracy to deprive him of his liberty, I don't know what is. 6 months in the loony bin, eating checkers on Quaaludes or whatever they give you in the loony bin, and that's where he was headed. I could tell. It's what they do. Too many judges. It's what they do. So he calls me on a Monday. I get the tape on a Tuesday. And by Friday afternoon, thereabouts, all the paperwork. He spent all weekend organizing it, printing his copies, notarizing what he had to notarize, and Monday set about filing it, and then went to his next hearing, which you'll hear about in the interview from the witness, who is one of my students, Mr. Craig. This we're going to start from the bottom up for the sequence of filing. And later you can review it from the top down to get it from the judge's perspective. Oh, what has our tattoo parlor owner pro se filed today? I'm sure on its face it was an occasion to rejoice for that judge because it was another chance to shoot somebody down, whether you got the law on your side or not. That's the kind of judge Lisa Novak is. And from the bottom up, we see the press release. Right off of the website, she's been appointed, Judge Lisa Novak. All this experience, and now she's a judge, and Arnold Schwarzenegger has appointed her. The compensation for this position is $150,000 a year. Divided by 12, that's like, what is that? $12,500 a month for this kind of conduct? Ouch. I scroll upward. This was a three-day assignment. I spent 3 8-hour shifts on this paperwork from scratch. You'll see there's a couple places where I was able to copy and paste existing formatted arguments that I have in a database, if you will, a compilation of arguments where certain instances crop up. I've heard tell from people coast to coast over the years that I've consulted of certain things that keep ringing a bell, like you have to have a psych evaluation or you're under arrest for contempt and they don't let you allocute. So I have a string of arguments that are already totally formatted, maybe even composed, and so all I have to do is copy and paste an entire argument into a new pleading and revise the paragraphs to fit the instant case. And so you see from the bottom, I'm looking at the Word versions, not the PDF document. On the bottom of the stack is a state criminal complaint with three exhibits. I'm going to open the state criminal complaint. And I see in affidavit form, this is a sworn statement, of course. Criminal complaints should be sworn affidavits. None of the names were changed. So you can go look up the case. You're going to have the docket numbers, the names. I see Lisa Novak. Olivares and Gasty were the two police officers or sheriffs that remanded the the defendant into custody for Judge Lisa Novak. And on my first page, I see Al Centraletti versus Lisa Novak. He's complaining. The first thing I do, this is what I do, okay? Not legal advice. Lawyers won't do this. But this is what I do. First things first, I seize the offense. They are not going to play offense against me. I know too much. When they're, I don't violate the law. And so every time they act against me, they're on the offense, and I can take the ball right away from them using the law. That's what this is for. A criminal complaint against the judge, because every judge likes criminal complaints in their name on the record in their court. They're political creatures, and you threaten their lifeblood. I can get you fired for that, maybe even thrown in prison for what you did to me, your quote-unquote honor. Introduction and parties. The above-named and undersigned complainant. I understand I have the right to complain to a prosecuting authority, but I elect to use this method to start criminal proceedings. And you'll see that he's petitioning under California Penal Code Section 904 for the impanelment of a grand jury. I'm on the next page, facts and exhibits, right below the names of the parties, identified by badge number and last name. Facts and parties, exhibits, a tape recording, in a baggie, an audio cassette, copy of the hearing. Everywhere he filed this complaint, with the FBI, with the court, and into his case. Everywhere he filed this document, stapled to the Exhibit A cover page, was a baggie with a cassette in it. Exhibit B, a receipt for the bail that was posted by the man you'll hear attended the hearings and watched all this, and the competence evaluation conducted by his own doctor prior to this mess. The subject hearing, August 22, 2007, I'm on paragraph 2.2. I went to San Mateo County Court, located in Northern Court, and showed up for my hearing in front of Defendant Novak. I was there only a couple of minutes when she called my name, and I stood up and she said, "Good morning, sir. The court is in receipt of two letters from the appointed doctors in this case, Dr. Anna Harriet Seaver and Dr. Robert Sardi. Both of the doctors indicate that you failed to contact them and make appointments in order to conduct the 1367 evaluations, which were ordered by this court on our last court appearance, July 25th. Do you have an explanation why you failed to appear to make contact with those medical personnel?" Yeah. Do you have an explanation why you haven't recused yourself? And bingo, he's arrested. Not given the opportunity to tell the court, I wasn't ordered to go see those two doctors. I was ordered to go see these two. So she read off two names he had never even heard before. So no, he doesn't need an excuse for having not seen those doctors. He wasn't ordered to. And you see paragraph 2.5 as the cuffs are going on, and you'll hear this in the audio. You haven't given me a hearing according to 1367, 1368. She interrupted and said, September 12th. So I interrupted her and said, "What was your reasons for saying that I'm mentally incompetent?" You'll hear all this. And so he goes to jail, and then he's bailed out. And with no opportunity to allocute. 2.9, my friends bailed me out at approximately 9:45 p.m., so he was in jail all day. I scroll. I'm on the next page. 3.1, authorities relating to contempt and allocution. So first I have to put my feet on the ground. What didn't they do that they're required to do? Parts of due process to which you're entitled. I'm entitled to allocute before summarily you take away my liberty. So contempt can be used as a coercive sanction or as a punitive sanction if you refuse or otherwise fail to turn over evidence, testify as a witness, reveal your sources. You can be put in jail for contempt to coerce you to perform. If the contempt sanction is imposed for insolence, for obstructing the administration of justice, then they can summarily impose jail as a sanction. But if they're going to do that, they have to offer you the opportunity to allocute. Right through paragraph 3.11, I see that I'm still briefing allocution. And I move on to page 8, paragraph 3.14. I'm still speaking about contempt and allocution. And I get to the top of page 9, violations of criminal statutes. Count 1. Section 209A, any person who seizes, confines, kidnaps, or carries away another person by any means whatsoever with intent to hold or detain, or who holds or detains that person for ransom, reward, or to commit extortion, or to exact from another person any money or valuable thing, or any or any person who aids or abets such act, is guilty of a felony, shall be punished by imprisonment in the state prison for life with the possibility of parole, because nobody was harmed. And then the count, 4.2. Without cause and without a lawful basis, defendants Novak, Olivares, and Gasti acted in concert to take the person of the complainant by use of physical force to a location from which demands for ransom emanated as a condition of complainant's release. This unlawful use of force to remove complainant to confinement, coupled with the defendant's demand for ransom and otherwise extort money from complainant, therefore constitutes a violation of kidnapping for ransom. Hi, Lisa. Count 2. Robbery is the felonious taking of personal property. In the course of the kidnapping of the complainant, defendants took or caused to be taken from the complainant all property found on his person, against his will and under threat of force, which includes firearms. Section 211, robbery. Next page, page 10. Count 3, false imprisonment is the unlawful violation of the personal liberty of another. Yeah, without allocution, that's exactly what that contempt sanction is. Count 4, a battery is any willful and unlawful use of force of, or violence upon the person of another. See how quickly a due process violation turns into jail. Because our legislatures have done an incredible job. California has a terrible code. It's traumatizing to have to research their code. But there are places, there are things in it that you can actually use. They really need better self-defense statutes in California. Count 5. Extortion is the obtaining of property from another with his consent, or the obtaining of an official act or a public officer induced by a wrongful use of force or fear under the color of official right. Bingo. Demand for impanelment of a grand jury, 5.1. I want a grand jury convened to put them in jail. Now I have my conclusion, my perjury jurat, 7.2. I believe that has to go in every criminal complaint, because for your beliefs, they can't send you to prison if it's a jury trial. You have the right to believe what you believe. And what's your exhibit? If I'm arrested for this, they call it a threat. What's your exhibit? They have to show this to a jury. Best of luck. Who's the bad guy? So I want my laundry in criminal complaints against the public servant. So their only exhibit is proof they're the bad guy and not me, because that's always the case. I'm going to close this state criminal complaint. You can read it at your leisure if you choose. And I'm back on my course page, and I see there's a petition to impanel a grand jury based on the criminal complaint and memorandum therein. I open up the petition, Microsoft Word, the defendants, Lisa Novak, Olivares, and Gasti. Petition, venue, and jurisdiction. Section 904, every superior court, whenever in its opinion the public interest so requires, shall make and file with the jury commissioner an order directing a grand jury to be drawn. That's what I want. 1.4, end of the paragraph, I cite CJC Section 1, Commission, or the Canons of Judicial Conduct. Every court shall behave in a way so as to instill in the public confidence in the court's integrity. Oh, yeah. Sure. So I'm petitioning based on the criminal complaint. I'm going to close the petition. And this is the sequence of filing. First, he's going to file the state criminal complaint and petition for a grand jury. Now we move up the line to the FBI complaint, Word version. Open that. It's got a caption and everything. You could file it as a letter, but I chose criminal complaint format. It just speaks louder than a letter. And here's the complaint to the FBI in Palo Alto. And I see on page 2 the quote from the FBI's website, Civil Rights Program. So I'm at the right bureau. I have the right agency. And I tell them so in my federal criminal complaint. I'm underneath paragraph 1.2, 18 U.S.C. 3282. Offense is not capital. 5 years. This just happened. I'm within the statute of limitations. So I'm trying to tell them I got Exhibit 1, which is the state criminal complaint in paragraph 1.2, and it's within 5 years. So I'm trying to tell them everything's, if I can prove a crime, everything's set for you to go. Under 2.1, I have adjudicative facts and the exhibits, which are the state complaint and its 3 exhibits. No mysteries. Paragraph 2.3, under the guise of allegations of mental incompetence for which the defendants have seen no manifestation of such in any past conduct of the complainant, nor at the subject hearing, the conduct complained of is merely defendant's contrivance to accomplish the false imprisonment of the complainant until he simply chooses to leave town, a mode of conduct fully examined and deemed to be a plain violation of his rights to liberty, to reside and to travel, and to enjoy private facilities in San Mateo County, which are open to the public. See U.S. versus Guest. Definite must read. A wonderful case about rights to travel interstate and enjoyment of public facilities. It was an instance of I can't remember which side of the river, but blacks on one side of, I think it was the Mississippi, would travel to the other side over a bridge to enjoy a different town, and they were being harassed to keep them on the other side of the river. And the harassment was at the hands of law enforcement. 2.4, complainant was falsely arrested on a prior occasion by Novak in the same case over absolutely nothing, and he is certain that any further attempts to recuse Novak will result in more imprisonment and humiliation under invalid allegations of mental incompetence. I'm leading to the conspiracy to deprive him of his liberty. 2.6, the appearance of fairness doctrine goes farther than the impartiality requirement in that it not only requires an impartial decision maker to be fair, but requires the decision maker to also appear to be fair. 3.1, violations of federal criminal statutes. I'm on page 5. I give them an intro, 3.1, 2, and 3. Counts 1 and 2. Paragraph 3.4, defendants Novak, Olivares, and Gasti are acting without probable cause in a scheme to deprive complainant of his liberty for undetermined durations, falsely alleging incompetence despite abundant proof to the contrary. This contrivance constitutes a substantial threat to complainant's health and future and is born of a groundless animus malice against complainant harbored by defendants for anyone possessive of confidence in the system and in the written law. The contrivance implemented by the defendants therefore constitutes a violation of 18 U.S.C. 241, conspiracy against rights. Here comes count 2, paragraph 3.5. On August 22, 2007, the defendants deprived complainant of his liberty and rights to equal protection by arresting him without cause in a scheme to deter him from remaining in California. This false arrest of the complainant therefore constitutes a plain violation of 242, deprivation of rights. As the recipient of this complaint conveying allegations and proof of federal felonies, you are duty-bound to act to cause the arrest and confinement of those complained of. Failure to do so constitutes a violation of at least 2 federal criminal statutes. And the conclusion, 4.1, he believes that this is true. So when the jury says, oh, he believes it, why would he believe it? Read the paperwork. Who's the bad guy? So in all my criminal complaints, I always say, I believe. And I close the FBI criminal complaint. So you see how I'm building a stack? Because I know the judge wants to see criminal complaints with the state and fed against her. I know every judge is just dying to see it. Like I said, this was fun for me. Make no mistake about it. This was fun. Affidavit of Prejudice. I closed the FBI complaint. Affidavit of Prejudice is the next one up the list, and it's the last filing. I went here with the state criminal complaint, petition for the impanelment of a grand jury. I took all that and attached it to a federal complaint and filed it with the FBI. I take all of that and I attach it to the affidavit of prejudice that goes into the case to get Lisa Novak the hell away from me because she's falsely arrested me. So, very logical course to follow to put all the pressure on the judge that I thought was necessary to get her off the case. It was my only mission. It worked like a charm. I'm opening up the affidavit of prejudice in Word. And here's his case. So if you want, you can go and look it up. They probably don't have the criminal complaint against Lisa Novak on file. A couple people I've spoken to said they can't get it. So it was so caustic that they have to hide it and hide from it. That's progress. Oh, that's progress. So he's arguing appearance of fairness. And he's complained because of the violation of due process to which the contempt arrest amounts. And so I'm going to brief the appearance of fairness. The paragraphs aren't numbered. But at the top of page 2, it really gets into it, the second paragraph there. A party claiming the appearance of fairness doctrine violation has the burden of showing it. This state's appearance of fairness doctrine is similar to the constitutional requirement of an unbiased tribunal mentioned above. But it goes farther than mere impartiality, blah, 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 okay? And here's my briefing of the appearance of fairness, right out of Amger second. And I see the final paragraph above the verification. Let's go one paragraph above that. Defendant has clearly identified and detailed extreme prejudice in the form of violations of rule as well as statute and has complained for Novak's arrest, prosecution, and life imprisonment, and this surely disposes of any such appearance. Yeah. The deprivations visited upon the defendant by Novak are starkly manifest, and defendant has addressed these to those able to sanction her for such. The appearance of fairness is lost as it relates to the involvement of Novak in this case, and this assures defendant that his due process rights are those to another judge in this case. And here's my affidavit of prejudice. And you have it all in, I closed that document, you have it all in PDF if you want to print it out, cruise through it. So from the judge's standpoint, you read from the top down. What has he filed today? Let's get into it. Oh, it's an affidavit of prejudice that I'm going to walk all over because I'm a judge. I'm Lisa Novak. She gets deeper and deeper into this stack and sees nothing but bona fide authorities and criminal statutes, felony statutes, and her name all over it. So I wonder what she thought about all of that when she, Lisa Novak, got into it. So first you're going to hear a couple minutes with the victim, the defendant. You're going to jail, and you can hear the cuffs go on. And directly after that is my interview of the witness who attended the hearings and saw the difference from the first two hearings where all they could do was arrest this guy for nothing. And the third hearing where she couldn't wait to get the hell out of that courtroom because of what he had filed. Justice at pen point. And she was out of there. The next judge comes in, calm, let's settle down. What have you got? Public defender. And he says, violation of speedy trial rights. As you'll see in the PDF version, his letters at the end of that document. And the motion, and the judge says to the prosecutor, is this true? I'll check, Your Honor, and I'll get back to you. And calls the public defender later that day and says the case is dismissed. So, anyway, like I said, this was fun. This was a fun assignment, and I thumped Lisa Novak on the head with that stack of paperwork. You don't have to do this. This is not legal advice. This is what I chose to do, and listen to the interview. Worked like a charm.
Letters from the appointed doctors in this case, Dr. Anna Harriet Speaker, and Dr. Robert Shuddy. Both of the doctors indicate that he failed to contact them and make appointments in order to conduct the 1357 evaluations, which were ordered by this court at our last court appearance, July 25th. Do you have an explanation as to why you failed to appear or make contact with those medical personnel?
Well, yeah, I tried. Do you have an explanation why you haven't refused yourself?
At this time, the defendant is remanded, and we're going to again order the defendant to be evaluated.
You haven't given me a hearing according to 1367, 1368 of the Penal Code.
September 12th, we're going to do that.
What is your reasons for saying that might be incompetent?
You know, I studied all kinds of stuff, and I know a lot of stuff. And it wasn't until I got to Dave Merlin I really started learning the law. You know, I learned all kinds of things, but those things didn't ever get me exactly where I wanted to be. And I studied other people like Irwin Schiff, Eddie Kane, Joe Bannister, Free Enterprise Society, Richard Cornforth, the Joy Foundation, and probably five or six more. I can't even think of them all of them. And the striking difference between what I learned from those people, which I did learn things, but I didn't learn how to be effective. And once I got Dave's courses, I started learning how to be effective. And not only that, it's a hell of a lot of fun. But, you know, you can learn theory all day long, but until you actually get practical application and someone actually shows you the way, you're pretty much stuck in the fog. And with Dave's stuff, you know, it's unbelievable. I was recently involved as a witness in the San Mateo case, and it was incredible to watch from the first hearing I got involved with, where they didn't want to hear anything he had to say, and then they hauled him off to jail, and then Dave wrote up a bunch of pleadings.
If I could, Craig, if I could interject here, Craig,
sure.
The gentleman that Craig is talking about is a tattoo parlor owner that the city of San Mateo wanted out. And they're harassing him on the civil side about the permits, and they got him in this little trumped-up criminal trial thing. And that's where this is happening, and so they made sure to abuse him when he showed up in court. And Craig went to those first two hearings.
It was really incredible to see the posture of the court before Dave's stuff got filed, and then once the criminal complaint was filed and a request to impanel a grand jury and complaints of the FBI, affidavit of prejudice, and so on and so forth, all of a sudden, that next hearing, it was like night and day. It was all of a sudden they were rushing to make sure that this guy's due process rights were being followed. They wanted to make sure everything was done correctly because they suddenly realized that maybe they had somebody in front of them that actually knew something, or at least he had friends that knew something. And the quality of the pleadings were, you know, fantastic. I mean, I showed them to a couple of people, and they said, wow, that's really offensive. I said, well, that's not what you have to do in order to really get their attention and make them stop and think about what their actions are really about. And so it was really unbelievable, and, you know, when I walked out of that courtroom, I felt like I was walking on air, and I was dangerous behind the wheel. I couldn't concentrate on anything. It was like an adrenaline surge, and I hadn't done anything. All I was a witness, and just seeing the effects of someone who has really done his due diligence to study the law and figure out exactly how to answer these people. And that's the most incredible thing I've ever seen. I mean, I haven't had a belly laugh like that in I don't know how many years.
And that was just to recuse a judge, this judge who, in the first hearing, had him physically removed from the courtroom, and at the second hearing, had him arrested, saying he's incompetent and in contempt of court, and that he didn't go to the two doctors that she sent him to. So in the first two hearings, this judge was out of control. And in the third one, after looking at the kidnapping complaint which is life in prison with the possibility of parole because no one got hurt. So she's looking at a state criminal complaint with exhibits for kidnapping and a couple other charges on underneath a federal criminal complaint filed with the FBI under an affidavit of prejudice saying now the appearance of fairness is lost, get off the case. So what Craig saw was a judge that I intended to traumatize with the law.
Traumatized he did. It was so funny. I mean, we left that courtroom laughing so hard. And, you know, there was a whole group of attorneys in the room when we walked in and in the courtroom. And, you know, when you walk in a room and all of a sudden the noise level drops by 50% and they all turn and look in your direction, you got a pretty good idea that they were probably talking about you. And that's exactly what they were talking about. They were talking about the guys that filed the criminal charges against the judge. And also, one other thing that I should interject here is that when we walked in the building, they had a public defender there. And in the previous hearings, nobody was ever showing up on this guy's behalf. And so suddenly, they had a public defender who showed up and said, oh, well, you know, I'll take care of this. And I guess the reason why is because they had to have a meeting in chambers before they did the deed in court so they could figure out exactly what they were going to say, who they were going to kind of shift responsibility for all these actions. And so the public defender took some of the heat from that, and so did the prosecutor. And the judge, of course, didn't accept any of the responsibility, but it was artful. It was incredible.
And she quietly left the case.
Exactly. And she was saying, "Oh, I agree that Mr. Cipolletti isn't incompetent, and he's a learned man in the law, and all these things that, you know, the hearing before they were saying, oh yeah, we're taking you to jail. That's it. Forget it. We don't care what you have to say." They didn't allow him to allocute. They asked him a question if he had a reasonable excuse. He said, yeah, and then he said, do you have an excuse why you haven't recused yourself? And then she said, remand him to custody and take him away. That was it. It was truly amazing. I mean, I've heard of stories like this before. I've never been involved with one. And it gives me goosebumps now. You know, it's just, that's how powerful this stuff is. And for people that don't believe, you know, go and check out the court record. You know, not only don't just take our word for it, find out. Go online. I mean, in San Mateo County, they got a pretty sophisticated court down there, and most of the things are on public record on the web. I'm not sure if this would make it, because this doesn't make them look very good. But
so this is the middle of October of 07. This was like 3 or 4 weeks ago, and that was after you'd had my courses, probably about 8 months, 9 months.
Right.
And you said, and we're going to speak in a broader sense now, that you didn't fully appreciate or grasp the power of what I was teaching, even though you understood it to be offense. And then seeing it in action right now, is it your opinion that I stuck totally to the methodology and the principles that I teach in those courses?
Not just that, it sounded like, and when I first joined you on your conference calls, I thought this guy was just an egomaniac, and you know, he's just boasting and all this stuff. And When you hear Dave on the conference calls and you look at his pleadings, and it's the same. It's always going to be the same, because he uses the same methods and it's the same type of strategy, and it's really effective. It's unbelievable. And I asked a couple of lawyers that I know, and I mentioned this stuff to them. We actually went to the web and looked at some of the criminal complaint and affidavit of prejudice and such. And they said, well, we would never do this. And I said, yeah, you would because all you want to get is people's money, and this is the way to be effective and be in and out and be done with it and move on to the next thing instead of milking everybody for all of the pennies they have in the world. But no, this is by far, I mean, I've been to many, many courts and watched. I'm a court watcher. I like to go in and sit and watch the court and see what they're doing and see how much money they're making an hour off of us and things like that. But this is really, really effective. I mean, I can't stress that enough. You know, you talk about you know, people, you know, giving you ideas about how you're going to do this and how you're going to do that. That's all they are, is ideas. Dave, in his courses, he gives you pleadings. I mean, he gives you, it's like a mini brief bank, and you can go and cut and paste, take what you want, leave the rest, adjust your pleading to whatever it is, and voila, you know, instead of spending, you know, 2 weeks writing up one document like most of us take, it's probably, you know, 5 hours of work.
And one thing I like is that these opportunities for offense, and you know that they're always saying, I wish they'd just use the system, these paper terrorists. Okay, I wish they'd just use the system in place. We got court rules. What's wrong with you people? And then you come in, you run into somebody like me that uses nothing but their system. I mean, the one that they're supposed to run, our system, and I use it better than they do.
Well, not just that. In this particular case in San Mateo County, everything we said we can back up with the court record. That's how powerful this is, and that's so incredible. They can't question me, and they, when of course, when the judge came in the room, she was prepped to know where we were sitting, and so she gave us a dirty look. And the two officers that were joined to the complaint, they were sitting there staring at us with very hard looks on their face, because I'd imagine their wives were not very happy when they came home and said, "Yeah, honey, I just got charged with kidnapping." So it's really incredible when you see this stuff really in action and how it slows them down. All of a sudden, you're someone that they got to respect, whether they like it or not. And the whole court changed. The whole attitude changed. And it was nothing short of miraculous, really.
Have you ever heard in the year that you've listened to my conference calls, have you ever heard a word of defense out of my mouth?
No, I don't think so. And the funniest thing is when I, you know, like I said before, when I first, you know, started listening to you, I thought, oh, this guy's so full of himself and yeah. And then I see in his pleadings, he's saying exactly what he's saying on those calls. There's nothing different. What you hear is what you see is what you get.
So none of this is about me. It's about how great our system is, really.
Exactly. I had a friend recently. I gave him a brief on something, and He started, "Oh, well, no, you're a lawyer." I said, "No, the legislature makes the laws, and the courts enforce them, and here's the law, and this is what the court said, not me, and this is exactly what Dave does. He uses their own law, their own record, to destroy them." And it's incredible. It really is.
And I get that leverage on them a lot of times because of our ignorance. Isn't that so?
Exactly, because, you know, a year ago, before I started listening to Mr. Merlin, I was into the UCC and the this and the that and the who knows else what, and, you know, and none of that stuff. I mean, some of that stuff may be true, you know, somebody may be able to use it to their benefit, but since I've been studying all this stuff for the last 8 years solid, I haven't seen one win using the UCC or any other kind of weird, esoteric, "I'm a man of the land," and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it just doesn't work. It doesn't get their attention. And even if it did work, or if they could even express it in court properly, if they had a jury trial, the jurors wouldn't know what the hell they were talking about, and the judges aren't going to tell them. Nobody's going to clue anybody of these guys in. And just like Dave says, they play so much off our ignorance. As soon as you start being able to recognize, and that's one thing I really got to say is before I start taking Dave's courses, I could go into court and they could have all kinds of criminal violations right in front of me, and I wouldn't be able to recognize it. And so now, when you get into the criminal side of things, because I was always kind of studying civil, it's so much easier. You know, I mean, either they kidnapped you or not. Either they broke your neck or they didn't. Or they punched you in the face.
Yeah, like in the instance of a civil case or a motion, it's where you file a lawsuit against them or they sue you, and you both have to jump into the cesspool and trade blows. Or in a motion battle, you file a motion and then they file an argument, and you have to jump in there and battle with them. But when you file a criminal complaint, you file it and walk away.
And not just that. If you have a civil action and acts going on, and you file criminal charges, boy, it sure makes those people start thinking a whole different way about what you're doing and what you're doing, how you're doing it to them, and you know what they're going to get. You know, all of a sudden you create doubt in their minds, and especially if you have the law on your side and the facts, and you have a record, and you can show this. And that's, to me, the most powerful thing, is being able to utilize the laws as they were intended, because this isn't an old boys club. It's not supposed to be. And we're supposed to be able to have a remedy. This is the only person I know in this country that's teaching Section 83 of the tax code. And this is all facts. This is all books. I can go into a law library, open the book up, and say, okay, here it is. This is it. It's not some theory about, you know, something. You know, it's not something that you have to be a PhD in law or kookiness to figure out. This is real simple the way it is. It's complicated because it is the law, and there are so many rules involved. But once you, you know, start studying and get in the right track, it's like I was like a guy without a compass before. Now I'm a guy with a compass. At least I know what direction I can go in. And as I learn more, I become more effective. And one of the funniest things is that ever since I started studying under Dave, people would come up to me who've known me for years, and they know that I'm a, you know, patriot kook or whatever they want to call me. And all of a sudden they're saying, wow, you changed your tune. You're not talking all that crazy stuff anymore. Now it's just law. And it's amazing the difference in how they treat me today as opposed to a couple years ago. It's really sticking to the facts and using the court rules and the canons on judicial responsibility and all the, learning the fine arts of knowing the lawyer's duties so we can charge them with at least with ethics violations and really being able to actually do something instead of just spinning your wheels. And because I knew a lot of stuff already, you know, because I studied definitions out of the dictionary, and you know, I have a bunch of books that, you know, give you legal terms, and then I read a bunch of case law, not as much as you have, but anyway, what it did was all of a sudden I'm not on the cliff anymore. I'm not right on the edge, getting ready to fall over. Now I'm firmly on the ground, and I'm just cruising along, and I'm going so much faster than I was before because now I can really start understanding things.
What I've alleged in the past or proposed is that, you know, you look at civil traffic court, which is the lowest thing on my radar. You know, I'm really elevated far above that level of litigation. But when you look at traffic court and my courses, not that they're based on traffic or about traffic, but when you know enough about procedure, it's a list of rules. Law is a list of rules. And if you can play six different games of darts, you can run rings around traffic court. Am I wrong?
No, not at all, because most of these judges, even, they don't really have a clue when you start talking code to them. They don't want to hear it. All they want to hear is how much money you got in your pocket. And, you know, it's so unbelievable. You know, traveling across the roadways is open as a matter of right to public vehicular travel.
What kind of change in your learning curve, was it exponential, or was it just a firm degree up?
No, it was definitely exponential, and you know, I gained so much from it. Now, I got to say, in all fairness, you know, I've learned things from my teachers, you know, a lot of stuff, you know, and some of it had to do with the law, but most of it was just kind of their theories. And now I just stick to the facts, and just like Dave said, I'm able now to really start understanding, and I take classes periodically with lawyers, and they think I'm a lawyer, and then I start laughing. They find out I'm not, and it's kind of funny, but it's really amazing when you have this kind of opportunity to learn from a person like this, he does this. This is what he does. And it's not fantasy, it's not ego, it's just a fact. And I imagine there might be some ego in there, but you know what? I think Mr. Merlin's entitled to that. He's done the work, you know, that most of us hadn't done. because everybody said, oh, these lawyers are corrupt, so as long as the lawyers are corrupt, then the laws must be corrupt too. And that's one of the most enlightening things that I've found out is that really, when you look at the law, it's pretty much perfect, just like what he says. But until you look at it, you wouldn't know. And until you really examine it, and then when you see it in action, boy, I'll tell you what, it's powerful.
It's not pretty, is it?
Hopefully have a better life.
Right, and have you ever seen me have my way with any aspect of law that I've argued or conveyed in documents you've seen? Have you ever seen me have to bend anything, or do I let law constrain everything I do?
No, that's the most beautiful part of it is that, especially when you have them on the record doing what they're doing, and they think that nobody can recognize it, and when you can pull it right out of your hat and say, oh yeah, here you go. Eat this for lunch.
Yeah, that San Mateo paperwork took me 3 8-hour shifts to make.
And that's incredible. I bet you a law firm would take a lot longer than that, and they wouldn't even do that. That was the biggest impression I got from my lawyer buddies was, we couldn't do this. We wouldn't do this. Yeah, of course you would.
Did they give you a list of reasons why?
Yeah, well, I gave them a list of reasons. All about money. How much money they could get out of somebody.
Well, I'd like to hear what they feel would be the sanction if they tried it, because you name a judge for kidnapping, you're not going to take another case in that county.
That's for sure. And as a matter of fact, the public defender that showed up on the day that the judge recused herself, he said that she is the most miserable judge they have in the county, and she's one of the newer ones, and that it really shocked her. She didn't know what to do, but she was a very good actress. She came back out from their little conference in chambers and came out, and she was very polite, and all of a sudden it was a different person. It was like the good witch this time coming from the bad witch last time.
Or at least the preoccupied witch.
Exactly. And I know that she wasn't very happy with the whole thing because of the way she was looking at us. I mean, you don't have to use words all the time to figure out what people are doing.
And the defender said that she didn't know what to do?
The what?
The defender said that the judge didn't know what to do with this?
Well, that's why they went into chambers to figure out what they were going to say in court.
But what exactly did the defender say?
Exactly, unfortunately, I didn't write it down, or I should have had a tape recorder going, but he said that we shook her up. That's what he said. And that she wasn't happy, even though she was very cheerful, forced cheerfulness. You know, when you see somebody who's got to take a big bite of something they don't like the taste of, that's what it was like.
Like that inconvenient kidnapping statute?
Exactly.
Hey, Craig, I might bother you later for a follow-up testimonial about my courses. This has been a blast. I'll let you go. We're looking at we're right on the cusp of 25 minutes, and I sure appreciate your time and your willingness to share your thoughts about my courses. Why don't you give a closing statement?
Well, it's my pleasure, Dave. I think that if we had more Dave Merlins in the world wouldn't be as screwed up as it is, and, we need to keep you around in the trenches, I think, but, your life is your life. But, it's really been a pleasure, getting to know you over the last year and, changing because literally you've changed my whole way of looking at things through the law, and it's actually law. And it's things I can go and I can point in the book and I can say, look, this section here says this. This is what you did. And, I knew some of that from before, but I didn't know how to express it and how to really make it so they didn't want to talk to me or whoever I was trying to help. So it's the effectiveness that really comes into play here. If you want to be effective, you need to have these courses, and you need to be able to not only... And a lot of people buy these things, and they don't watch them. They get the DVDs, and... it's amazing. I know several people that have them, and I say, have you been all the way through the course yet? Oh, well, I haven't had time. Well, make time, because it's really worthwhile. Because if you do, you'll get really excited about what you're doing. And all of a sudden, this stuff won't be so, it won't be drudgery anymore. It'll be exciting, and it'll be something you can really sink your teeth into and turn it into a lot more fun than you've ever had in your life, believe me. Once you go through this course, you'll be looking at things so differently than you know, before. You know, I used to study under people that would say things like, be wise as a serpent and gentle as a dove. And where does that get you? But, you know, nowhere. You know, and so when you go in there with your axe, be ready to use it.
And I'm saying instead of being a victim, be an opportunist.
Exactly. Anyway, Dave, no, it's been a pleasure knowing you and studying under you, and I hope that you're around for a few more years anyway. No, I've got nothing but good things to say about David Merlin and his courses.
Well, thanks, Craig. You have a good night, and again, thanks for all your participation on the conference calls as well.
It's my pleasure.
Okay, you have a good night, and we'll talk soon, I'm sure.
Alrighty.
Take care, buddy.
All right, bye-bye.